been there a few seconds earlier, we've got sprayed in water and a lively bottle. Yeah. Right, James has told me to start, so I will. I'm here to talk about a learning design project at the OU, which Bronya Canole is heading and I'm working with her on it. So I want to talk about the kind of background to the project, some case studies we've been looking at, the tool compendium we've been using, where we want to go next, and some LD issues. So at the OU we kind of had quite a lot of experience in learning design. I've worked on a learning design player called SLED, which has been funded by the company called GIST. I've only worked on a kind of pendulum planner called Dialogue Plus, which was at Southampton. We've done some work with LANs in the joining project, group allocation. Our VLE's Moon, we've done some work with Moon people on LD. And we had a kind of an internal look at lots of case studies about the user technology, which I'll come to with. So it's kind of felt we wanted to kind of bring all this expertise together and actually kind of be spread around the university. So at the start of the year, we set up a learning design project. So what do we want to do? It's kind of, things became so much simpler when we said we just want to be OU-centric, Open University-centric. So we want to know OU academics, design activities, particularly with a particular kind of focus on using new technologies. We've got an e-learning strategy, but at the OU, you know, for a lot of people, technology is paper. You know, so we're trying to move away from that. We've got a big VLE now and stuff, so we want to try and help a lot of academics get into using new technologies and stuff. So we think for that, there's kind of two things we really need to do. One is kind of capture current practice, both internally and externally, and then help try and scaffold the design process, hence the funky metaphor, which are nothing if not obvious. Okay, a chap called Stuart Nixon at the OU went around and spoke to lots of people in course teams and that, and got a set of user requirements. He said, what would you want from a learning design type tool? They said what they'd like is a range of case studies to see what other people are doing, information about how they can use these technologies that are available, and how they can be used sort of practically in courses, what they're good for. And then kind of guidance through the process of creating learning activities, particularly for a lot of new academics. And then a kind of a range of further resources, both externally, but also name contacts in the university. It's like, I'm thinking of using a wiki, who can I go and talk to? So that's what they said they wanted. And I've interpreted with yet another funky metaphor. It's kind of building a bridge between the kind of pedagogy and stuff we've done now over here in the year about designing courses and a lot of technology and what that's good for me. So I see that's kind of what the tool is doing, what we want it to do. Peter Wilson at the OU set up a project looking at case studies, and they went around and interviewed lots of people. There was a focus on the kind of pedagogy that people were using, and a particular focus on kind of innovative stuff. So it wasn't kind of a complete audit of what we did, but rather looking at what people were doing with new technologies and things. And they were kind of hour-long interviews usually, and they've been transcribed and written up fully in that, and so we've got lots and lots of data. A couple of things came out. One was there seems to be quite a lot of differences between the disciplines, both in the technologies they used and how they used them. So this may have some kind of implications for the reuse of learning design, as we think of later, if people from arts have a different view from people from social sciences. So. And another thing that came up was something we've kind of always known, really, but the traditional OU model is that we put a lot of effort into production, and all these nice printed units and CD-ROM stuff, and then presentation, when the course goes out to students, is kind of fairly light, very cheap. With e-learning, there's much more of a shift to presentation. If you're using stuff like wikis and stuff, there's a lot more effort goes into the presentation. And that's important for us as an institution because we haven't lowered the effort we put into production, so now we have high presentation costs and high production. Okay, so this they did 44 case studies, and this is them kind of broken down by... That's an awful colour, isn't it? I blame the projectors for it now. Anyway, what there are is that there are 41 total. There's 9 that come under the general heading of multimedia simulation, and seven under asynchronous discussion. They're the two biggest groups. I think it's quite telling, because that's the kind of stuff we know how to do at the OU. But there's only one under podcasting and one under wiki and stuff. So there's a kind of a split across the world. If you could see it, that would be very interesting. Okay, Compendium. It's a tool that's developed by KMI at the Open University. It's an open source tool. It's really for kind of mapping arguments, a kind of concept mapping tool. So, but it's extendable, and we had knowledge of how it worked. So we started just playing around with it, really. And it allowed us to kind of quite quickly prototype what we wanted to do. I'd like to give you some really good criteria for why we selected it, but basically it was because it's there. So I think I've been kind of messing around with learning design for a few years now. It's also a really hard thing to get across to academics what it actually is. So we really wanted something to put in front of them quickly to help them kind of come to terms with what the project was about. I'll give you a quick demo. Okay, so in its kind of original format, it's for mapping arguments. So you might say argument. And then you might say, right, okay, I've got a question here. Wikis. And of course, someone might say, okay, they're good for collaboration. And then link those two things. And you can put in any resources you want. So over here, you might say, Wikipedia is a good example, and then that will give me a live link to Wikipedia. So I might say, well, they're bad for dialogue. But then you might decide to reach a decision. Okay, we're going to use them for the group. Okay, so that's kind of how it's been used a lot to kind of map arguments. And frankly, it's kind of quite good in groups. You kind of get. It helps people stick on track, and it's a good way of kind of recording your decision-making process. But one of the things you can do is you can add in a new stencil. So we added in a learning design stencil. We added in these icons for activity, assignment, output, resource, role, task, and the BLE tool that we're doing. So now we can create a new activity. So let's create one for a debate. Okay. And we kind of start getting people to follow the swim lane convention. So you might have a tutor role, and in a debate you might have a poser, opposer, scribe maybe, and maybe then you have a task that you want more to do. Read the intro. And that's related to a resource, which is the introduction. Then perhaps the proposer puts in an argument, and you want them to do that in the forum. Maybe, and then there's some output, maybe, and you can add in notes here as well. So you can add in notes. So you can say. Forms part of the assignment. Okay. Again, there's an asterisk over there which gives you that text. So we gave this to a lot of academics, and they very quickly started creating really kind of complex structures. So this is something that a group did very quickly. They got a student and a tutor.
an activity briefing, that's the resource they put in. My stuff is the e-portfolios, they're putting some stuff into the portfolio.
You can see it kind of goes on, there's instant messaging, discussion, a wiki they're using. So they're quite, you know, they've been quite complex activities here. So we run 8 different workshops with people from all the different faculties over the course of a couple of weeks. And so the only kind of introduction we gave was pretty much what I showed you there. And then we asked them to go and work in groups on an activity they'd been designing recently. And they sort of sat down in groups around a computer. So the feedback we had was they found it really easy to use, and they kind of quickly created learning activities all huddled around the machine. They found it helped them reach consensus about stuff they were kind of discussing, what they wanted to do and what should happen. A lot of people, because it's kind of fairly unstructured, they like being able to use it a different kind of granularity. Some people really like being able to use it just for a specific activity, and other people were kind of designing a whole course structure with it. You can move between those different levels. A lot of time we kind of help people kind of surface complexity, which they hadn't really appreciated was there. When they started going through it, they thought what was a 2-hour activity actually turned to be a 9-hour activity when they started breaking it down. Now, you could say, isn't that just a concept mapping tool with some neat icons? And you'd probably be correct. But what kind of really amazed, so I was kind of really worried about people using it, but the icon set really made a difference. If you'd given them the original compendium, they would have said, what's this got to do with learning design? But I've discovered something that Steve Jobs knew a long time ago, but icons matter, you know, they kind of really help people get to grips with it. And we also kind of help them understand the different roles there are in a lot of our learning activities. For instance, what the tutor does, also things like the help desk, when they might be required to provide support. And something that came up in Diana's talk this morning, question from Simon, about this, you know, people used to sharing content. I think it's because content's how we think. But a lot of people said, when they started using this tool, it made them separate out content from activity. You saw, like, I was pulling in the resource there. So the activity is read intro, and then the intro is the resource. And it's a very obvious separation. That's quite significant for us as a university, I think. For instance, we've got this Open Learn project, and we found it really difficult to extract content that isn't kind of wrapped up in its pedagogy in a way. So if had we been designing like this, that would have been an easier process. Where next? At the moment, it's kind of really unstructured. I think we need to add in some kind of wizards or guidance to help people through the process much more. And we want to link in these case studies, so when if you choose a wiki tool, then that will link you through to examples of what people have been doing with wikis. We've been looking at kind of exporting that into Moodle. So once you've created an activity in this, because Moodle's our VLE, you can then kind of click a preview button and it'll show what it'll look like in Moodle. Provide some vocabularies for certain things, so perhaps where we've got VLE tool and you can put in whatever you want, we'd like to have a drop down list there of the kind of common tools and perhaps common tasks. I think the big thing for us now is to move to the next software stage. We kind of started using the Pendium and say just it was there and it seemed to get us quite far quickly. But I think we need to decide now whether we carry on down that route or whether we build a bespoke thing, which is what the OU would like to do, or whether we move something like LAMS. We need to add in metadata. I showed there was a field where you could add in text. I think I'd like to add in just a very few, not many fields, things like, you know, study time. You could perhaps then you'd be able to see like study time clocking up in the corner as you've kind of built up your activities and things. Allow some user tagging to allow people to describe activities in ways that are meaningful for them and build up, you know, tag clouds and things so people can search between them. And in October I'm going to Australia to see James for 3 weeks, and what I'd like to do there is take some stuff we've done in Compendium and map it across into LAMS to do kind of a comparison. Okay, what it's kind of brought home to me is that there's kind of a dilemma or a continuum at the heart of a lot of these planning tools and design tools, from being really kind of guided and structured to kind of really open and you just do whatever you want. And at the moment I think we're kind of
it's always quite at this end. I think you probably need to add in a bit more of this, but not too much.
And you probably need different perspectives on it for people. So I think we can summarise it by this.
Everyone's favourite, the paperclip. Looks like you're committing suicide. I just can't think of
like too much guidance. You just don't want it. And this, or the, it's too open. It's just everywhere. So I think getting that there's a tension in these tools between those two things. Okay.
This is one of Kathy Sierra's pictures. So I think we're kind of moving along this process now. What I don't know yet is whether we've got this big wicked wall in the way that we're going to hit sometime. So at the moment it seems like we're making incremental developments, but James can probably tell me more than most people about the size of this wall and what we need to do when you hit it.
Okay. The learning design tool is one of the things that could kind of really be at the heart of a lot of what we do at the OU. And sorry to disagree with you, Diana, but I think open learn and open content is important. you said it's kind of irrelevant. So at the OU we've got this project open learn where we're releasing a lot of our content freely if it comes up. And so we're talking to those people there, and you know, the idea is if you've got lots of these resources, they're nice in their own way, you want to be able to pull them together in different ways. So for instance, I might want to take a chunk of stuff from a business course in innovation and put it together with something from a technology course on how you design technology and stuff. So you could use a learning design tool to kind of provide different pathways through these different resources. Okay, if you haven't seen it, this is Open Learn. And they've started using Compendium in Open Learn. It's one of the tools you can use. I'm going to take concept of innovation, wrap an activity around it, and then pull in another resource from somewhere else. SLED, the project has been working on with JISC, so SLED's a learning design player that operates with full LD and it runs on top of Copper Core. So it could be that SLED becomes the kind of output engine for the learning design tool. The VLE, I won't go there, but as you know, we've got Moodle, which I think trying to provide a link between those two, as many people here are interested in. Does that bring back bad memories, Diana, course models? At the OU, we had this project course models. We're trying to sort of devise sets of courses, kind of prototypes, if you like. It's kind of a production thing. And I've often wondered whether course models is kind of too high sort of a granularity, whether it's much more about having shareable learning activities, I think. But also the kind of content management system. What I'd really like to do is, if I'm in my learning design tool, to be able to pull in resources from my content management system as and when I need them. Okay, here's a. You probably can't see the blue stuff at all. Here's a kind of slide about what I think future dimensions or future learning might be like. I'm trying to pull in all the kind of stuff that's relevant. So there's open content, things like iTunes U, OpenLearn, there's virtual presence, things like Gab, where you've been able to chat, personal learning environments, new devices, things like Microsoft Surface. Social networks, particularly Facebook, open API, virtual, something like that. User-generated content, interactive university. And I think learning design, in this kind of broad sense, is part of this universe for no reason. It's a way of pulling together some of these things in a learning environment. So I don't see it as being the central part here. It's not what your future learning environment will be, but it's one of the dimensions, I think, of this kind of new world. Okay, that's me. Anyone time?
You use Compendium, which is a concept.
Yeah.
Which decision came first, to use Compendium or to use a graphical form of representation for learning designs?
A graphical form of representation and then
Compendium. How did you arrive at that decision?
I think kind of experience of working with the very formal learner design spec and trying to take that out to academics, and it's like before you get anywhere you have to give them an hour's lecture about learning design, and it's because it just doesn't get you anywhere anyway, you know. So instead of just sitting some, you know, Reload's a lovely tool and everything, but you can't sit a novice down in front of the Reload learning design. So you needed something, and I've always been impressed by LAMS, that you can just sit a novice down in front of it and they'll just do stuff. And I kind of like the concept of affordances, you know, like the affordance of WebCT is sticking up a load of content. The affordance of LAMS is kind of creating quite activity-based stuff. And so we wanted, you know, a tool that kind of had an affordance that allowed people to kind of play around and move stuff around a bit, which kind of obviously lends itself to graphics.
Jonathan? Representational issues so far in terms of the chosen graphical form diagrams and how people can be used by just looking at this part of the presentation.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment it's kind of very loose, so it can get very messy, and I think this comes back to that tension about how much you guide them. So we haven't even locked it so that there's a swim lane for tutor and a swim lane for students, so you can learn more of it. Some people rearrange completely differently, and so if you don't lock it down somehow, then it's not very transferable, because someone may do it completely different to someone else. And I think it's one of the things, in some ways the best low transferable thing is the kind of narrative, the written text, but you can't sit down and read that. Don't you? And so I know, I kind of struggle sometimes if someone gives me a visual map. I think that's very good, but what happens here is it does kind of take, it took me a while to kind of start reading them in a way. Kind of you learn to look down, okay, they're doing this, they're doing this, they're doing this. So reading other people's ones, I think, is quite a skill. I think creating your own is quite intuitive. I think reading other people's is probably takes a bit of time. Yes?
Your dimension of guided tourism, which is an interesting way of thinking about it, but can't we have the best effect of all?
I think, I think you can. So I think you probably, you want a tool that provides different perspectives for different users. If like, you know, you're a really kind of novice user, I don't know how to create an activity, then you probably do want the step-by-step guide. If you've got, so I know when I create activities, I kind of jump between levels, like one of them is kind of writing something very specific, and I jump up to the kind of learning outcomes and stuff. So I don't want something that kind of tells me I've got to specify all my learning outcomes here, and then, and at the end I write the content. I need to kind of jump between those things.
Yeah, so you want a kind of default sequence.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But that, doesn't that manage to get the best of both worlds if you build that kind of flexibility in?
Well,
I guess if it goes too open, then it's too much hard work. You should make decisions and
But I think that's when it's actually quite, I mean, at the moment it's just very open, but the only sort of limitation is the icon set we give it. So when we give it to course teams, they kind of generally sit down, project it up onto a wall, and it's really good for them working through that design process, and it helps them, so they don't think they want to be. Perhaps for an individual, that might be structured. It's almost like you need to turn wizard on or off, or select wizard.
And just on that, isn't a critical factor there time? That, I mean, the more open it is, the more conducive to reflection, sharing, discussion about the decisions you're making. But most academics, when you ask them, they want sort of a simple rule of time things, because the biggest thing is making that time.
Yeah.
You know, there are, like, therapists who can think about the problems. I was going to ask a different question, which on that last slide, for you yourself, you kind of implied that the learner was at the centre of all of that. You had a learning environment, and then you had these things all around the outside. I don't know if that's what you mentioned, Clyde, but were all those things being integrated by the learner or under the learner's control? Because learning design, in some manifestations, would actually see itself as being at the centre, because what it does is orchestrates and coordinates things for the learner. So if you're putting learning design on the outside, does that mean that learning design is only relevant to quite small chunks of learning, because the big decisions about how they blend that sit with the learner?
I think this is more about what a future learning environment might be, and so the element of how much the user controls it. I think for any individual university or user, any one of these things will be bigger and more important. Some people may just live in Facebook, so you've got to then kind of filter everything through into that.
So I think what I was trying to get across here was that the kind of model is that centralised via the we're putting everything into one place, and now sometimes we're like, we've gone out to places, and there's lots of different ways we can manage the environment. And learning design is one of them, I think, in particular ways, like open content, and really, perhaps the PLE stuff, but it's not the only way to structure this stuff. I think we see a much kind of greater diversity of what constitutes a learning environment.
Hey, Martin, you mentioned when you were showing us. Running us through the compendium there, one of its characteristics is that it can surface complexity in a design. But I wasn't quite clear on how that actually comes about, in the sense that you showed us, I think, a potential map of a design at a number of different levels, which I guess would be n number of levels, depending on the level of complexity. But is there then a map of the maps, in the sense that is there an overall map which maps out the complexity of all of those different levels?
You can create sub-maps, so you can have a map of maps, if you like. So at your course level, you may have a lot of number of maps which represent the kind of weeks of the course, and then each one of those go through to the sub. The thing about surfacing complexity, we've seen particularly people who've already designed an activity in their heads or their discussion, and then come to use compendium to map it out. Suddenly they realise they start adding up all these different channels, but it's taking 15 minutes to do that, really. We're going to do this, and actually, you know, they realise it's a lot more complex than they originally planned for. So just talking it through, I think, and having a tool that helps you bring all that stuff to the surface has been quite useful for a lot of course students in that kind of collaborative way of working.
Mm. But it doesn't actually give you
no, and I think that
let's say a vertical picture of the depth.
No, you're right. That's one of the things we like to do, particularly with the metadata tools. You can start having ways of tracking this stuff. Well, actually, even just in study time, you've now allocated 50% over your allocation for this week.
There's a follow-up question on that. So, I think presentation of the issue because the screen is so constrained that it can only display too much.
And it
can only handle much of the information that you can see. So if the presentation doesn't work anymore, what are the forms of presentation you offer?
Well, at the moment it's just that, you know, it's like you can have sub-maps and things, so you can have, but I think the point you've touched on, at least just in the visual representation, is the problem. I want to kind of group things, but without them necessarily disappearing if it's into a sub-map, which, as you can do in a kind of landscape. So I was mapping out an activity for summer school, where they did some stuff in summer school, and they went away, and they came back to summer school. I wanted to be able to kind of group the summer school stuff together, but still keep it there, which you can't do, so it's almost like you want to be able to shade that stuff off. So I think there's lots of stuff, there are tweaks we can do with that, I think. Okay. This is my laptop, that's the second one. Yes.
Just to check the jacket because I have to be sure.